Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 128 of the Lift Free and Diet Hard podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Coates. As always, I haven't been replaced yet to this day. And I actually have the honor of having a great guest on, first time for IFBB Pro, Ben Pakulski, who, while I've been following Ben's career for longer than he's been in the fitness educational space, he's been in the bodybuilding magazines I grew up on. We were just talking off air how a good old friend of mine I used to lift right next to in gyms is Frank McGrath, who's also another iconic IFBB pro and Canadian. So, but you are a lot of things. You are a prolific educator. You are the CEO of your company, Muscle Intelligence. I want to get into the kind of the trajectory of your career. We'll get to there, but you early on studied, you have a Bachelor of Kinesiology and Exercise Science, which of course was the direction that led into, I think, the educational space. And you have a ton of educational resources, your website, your YouTube, your podcast. So, well, thank you. It's an honor to have you on.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Great to connect. I look forward to what sounds like it's going to be a great discussion.
Good. And then, of course, there's the bodybuilding side, which I really wanted to lead with the fact that you're a well-respected and legacy educator in this space. But it all sort of started with the fact that not to diminish anybody accomplishing an IFBB pro card now, but you are someone who actually stood on the Olympia stage, which is a higher standard. You actually placed second at the Arnold, if I'm not mistaken. You Correct. Won the biggest show in Canada, in your career, and your Olympia placing, I think, something like maybe 11th. I mean, that's 11th in the entire world of bodybuilding, okay? So not a lot of bodybuilders actually get to stand on the Olympia stage for the heavyweight bodybuilding, which is impressive. So here's where I want to go with this. We've got a lot of young fitness professionals, and they're setting out to seek their pro card because they think that the pro card is what's going to establish them as credible and set them up for a career as a point of authority. And you leaned heavily into education and coaching away from a very successful career. And so I'm curious as to what happened. Was this reflect a greater passion, a long-term vision, or was it partly an understanding that there's a shelf life to being on stage as a competitor and the trappings of success that comes with it?
Well, first, I never saw myself as a bodybuilder. Bodybuilding is what I did. It's not who I am. And yeah, I think bodybuilding was something I kind of needed, and I enjoyed it and I loved it. But really, at the essence of who I am is someone who just really values growth. And I value growth at all levels. And I want to grow physically. I want to grow mentally. I want to challenge myself. And I just want to experience my perimeters. I want to experience what the limits of what I'm capable of. And I think that maybe more defines me more than any other role or title. And so as a professional bodybuilder, I loved pushing myself. I didn't love the show. If I didn't have to compete, I wouldn't compete. I competed honestly because the first time I competed, I was finishing university and I wanted to get in shape because I got a cool job. And I was like, I want to look good in my suit. I won. And then I kind of won everything I entered. And then I got a pro card and then people started paying me even before I got a pro card, people started paying me to work out. And I was like, I'm getting paid more to work out than I am to do this job. So, okay, let's stop doing that really quick. And then I just, the reason I competed was I could see my progress from year to year. So like, it was almost like you're stripping away the fat so you could see how far you've come. So I was more of a process oriented guy right from the beginning. Like the show was cool and I enjoyed it because it was very hard for me, like very uncomfortable to get that lean. And I enjoyed that part of it. I enjoyed the suffering. I enjoyed the regiment, but it was never about stepping on stage. That was more of a pageant to me. I was like, yeah, whatever, man, let's go up here and flex. And that's cool. And so the thing that the audience maybe should know about me is bodybuilding was never easy for me. I was never gifted. It was never something like I was particularly strong. I wasn't particularly muscular. I wasn't certainly very lean. So all those things that you would associate with a typical, top level bodybuilder, this person probably builds muscle really easily. They probably are very strong naturally. They probably really lean naturally. Well, the answer for me is no, no, and no. And so I have this strange, maybe sickening drive to do the things I'm not good at. And so when I find something I'm not good at, I pursue it. So that's where bodybuilding was for me. So when I left professional bodybuilding, it was just time, I didn't have the same drive. I just had two kids and my values just shifted. And I knew that for a very long time, the struggles that I had endured to build muscle and get strong and get lean, there's a lot that people were just doing wrong, and not necessarily wrong, just like limited mindset, right? There was very limited education. As you know, when I was doing this 20 years ago, when I started doing it certainly 20 years ago. And the things that people did know was often just bro science. It was like, oh, I did this because this guy did this. And you're like, what the hell does that mean? So I was very blessed to have this. I'm very skeptical by nature. I think I'm very, I think I'm just an open-minded skeptic is what I say. So I'll take information and then I'll go research it on my own. So, a bit of an obsessive personality. So I went and researched kind of everything I could to find out how I could do it more effectively. Like, there's no way that there's not a reason behind this. Like, you should eat cheesecake before you go on stage. Why? Right. You should, right. Like, why should I do 2 hours of cardio? Why can't I do no cardio? And I just question everything.
Why is tilapia good for thinning your skin?
Magical. Tilapia is magical.
Crazy belief.
The magical fish of the sea. So that's really what kind of drove my current direction. This constantly asking why.
There's something clear in a theme underlying this, and I know you'll agree with me on this. There are a couple of books that talk about this. A Gold Mind Effect is a good example, The Talent Code, and other books that talk about fixed versus growth mindset. And what you described is pure growth mindset. And the danger that a lot of people get into, professional athletes or athletes of any ilk, people in other walks of life, when kids especially are rewarded, praised with saying how intelligent they are, how talented they are, it forms an identity that sort of becomes fixed. And it's been shown through study and research that those people then, they can go on. And when they're confronted with things that could question their status as talented, their identity as talented, then they often would shy away, even to the point where they would be dishonest about results on tasks that they weren't good at. Whereas the person who is praised for effort tends to embrace the effort and has more of a natural growth mindset. You quite literally describe growth mindset.
Yeah.
And it's probably one of the most fundamental attitudes that underlies success in any career space, any competitive space. Any further thoughts?
It's funny. I have two children. One's a boy, one's a girl. My son is exactly what you just said. He was born and everyone's like, this is the smartest little kid I've ever met in my life. From the time he was 18 months old, he was like just ridiculously brilliant, like memory and insight. And you're like, this kid's not 2 years old. You're like, how? And now he's 11 and he's got a very, very fixed mindset. Not only he's fixed mindset, he's very afraid to fail. He's very afraid of what people are going to say. He's afraid to try new things. Whereas my daughter was not intellectually gifted. She's very physically gifted. But she was, for me, she was always rewarded. Like, great effort, baby. You did awesome. Like, you worked so hard. And she embodies a growth mindset. It's so interesting to observe as a dad who's relatively conscious of what's going on. And I'm obviously very conscious of steering my son away from the fixed mindset. But it's so interesting to observe his pain, like literal emotional pain, when something stands in front of him that he knows he's not just going to knock out of the park. He's like, I've never done this before. I don't want to do it. Like, oh, interesting. It's really interesting to watch. And so, yeah, it's a great observation you have, and you're right. And I'll tell you what, bodybuilding gave that to me, right? I don't know that I always had that. I think I self-identified as a really lazy kid. I came from a family of obese alcoholics and like nobody did anything. Everyone just watched television all day long and ate shit, junk food. And so
okay. Swear away.
Yeah,
you're good.
So for me, bodybuilding, I started to realize like, oh, if I just put a little effort in there, I could do some really cool stuff. Like, man, I'm beating some of the bodybuilders that I looked up to when I was a kid. And it was just an interesting bodybuilding for me was really what opened the door to realizing that you can do anything. Cause like, if you would have asked, anyone who knew me growing up, if I would be standing on stage in my underwear making a living as I grew up, everyone would laugh. But it's the truth, right? Like, and that it's so, I just kind of overcame all the things I wasn't so good at.
I do want to have a little fun here with this. And just to give people, again, the idea, because I really didn't want to make a big deal about the IFBB Pro stuff. I really want people to understand, like, your legacy as an educator. But there are some funny moments with this. And I mean, you see a lot of bodybuilders on stage, and some of them are actually quite short and quite small. And there's this video recently of Brian Shaw coming out and giving the awards to, like, I think the, what is
Don
it?
Don Clarita.
Yeah. And it's like, everybody's laughing because Brian is so much larger. I mean, what is he, 6'9 and 400 pounds and one of the greatest strongmen of all time. And you probably know where I'm going with this. There's also a very famous photo of you, and someone listening's probably seen it, where you're on a plane sitting in a seat next to Brian Shaw.
Brian Shaw, yeah.
And Dana Lynn and Rob Bailey, who I literally just met in passing at an event, and they're so nice. They're in the seat in front. And I think Kai Greene is also there. And Kai, of course, is one of the greatest bodybuilders of all time.
Yep.
And here's you looking none too pleased, being completely enveloped by Brian. And here's the thing. Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, you're a tall bodybuilder. You're a big dude. Like, you're 6 feet tall at least, right?
But yeah, I'm about 5'11".
There you go, right? And that is very, very tall for high-level competitive bodybuilders. And it's really funny. If anybody just wants to go Google this, just for a cute chuckle, is just look for this photo and any of the names involved. It's all over the internet, and it's just comical to compare sizes. Anyway, I had to throw that in there.
So I'll give you context on that photo. So I was sitting beside Kai. Kai was in the window. I was in the aisle, and the seat in the middle was empty. And then the last guy on the plane is Brian Shaw, and he's stumbling down the aisle, and we're looking at the seat between us. And we're like, there's no fucking way. Like, there's no way this guy's sitting in the middle of us. And he wasn't, but he sat there, like, as a joke. He saw it, and he goes, "Hey boys, that's my seat." He sat down, and we're like, and we were flying from, that was from New Jersey to like Manchester or something, or Birmingham, where the
wow.
They had body power. He sits down, and Rob and Dana just start dying. So he snapped a photo. He got out, and he had the whole road beside us too. But it was a funny photo.
Probably wise. I mean, it's an iconic moment in the history of fitness industry. I love it. Okay, so you perfectly alluded to something that I have prepared. We didn't plan this, and it was the whole notion of all like the sort of the bodybuilding bro science lore. And it was one of the things that I wanted to ask about, like, what has your competitive career taught you about nutrition training? Like, what were the actual valid things that came out of there, the stuff that works, and what has your education in training and nutrition largely debunked? And especially when it comes to the stuff that permeates into the everyday, like a good example of something that came out of bodybuilding, because a lot of popular fitness stuff does, was meal timing, and especially like smaller, more frequent meals stoking the metabolic furnace, which we now know is not supported by science.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I'll say is I grew up as a kid who was very much alone. Like, I spent the entirety of my childhood by myself. Didn't really have any parental guidance. Just kind of get thrown into this world and just figure shit out. So I developed this protective mechanism where I just assumed that I was going to have to fend for myself, and I was going to have to learn to discern between good people and bad, and good information and bad information, and navigate my way through this world as early as 7 years old. So I developed this filter, and this is a vast generalization, so nobody judge me on this, but this is a vast generalization that everyone's full of shit and everyone's trying to serve their own bias, right? And so, and it doesn't mean I think everyone's full of shit. It's a vast generalization, but like in general, I developed this belief, and it's a protective mechanism when I was a kid, that everyone has an agenda and everyone's having to service their own bias. And I don't still think that's true, but this is how my brain worked when I was a kid. So when I got into bodybuilding at a young age, I would take everyone's information. I was like, I want to hear what you have to say. And then I would pass it to this lens of, well, what's actually true and what is serving their bias? And because that's how I had, so picture this, effectively, I don't know, I was a street kid, but like I was a pretty street smart kid. So I knew at least in that world, everyone had an agenda. Everyone was out to do something for themselves. So as I joined bodybuilding, by default, I still passed everything through this lens. I was like, what are they trying to do? Are they trying to get something from me? Why do they say this? They're trying to sell me something. So as I started to take everyone's information because I was a voracious learner. I also would pass through this lens of like, what's good and what's not good. So I just started just identifying gaps. And I just didn't take what people said as gospel. I was like, okay, this guy seems to know what he's talking about, but is it accurate? Where does it apply contextually? And what bias is he serving? And what can I take from this and benefit from it? So I would take the information. I'd often apply it to myself and see how it worked. So sifting through all of this vast ocean of information, you start to identify things that work contextually, work sometimes, maybe they don't work the next time. what you'll notice, and you'll get this, someone trains at a high level, some theories work at a certain level contextually, and then they stop working later. They don't work when you're training at a high level. You know, like how much volume? I don't know. How much frequency? How many reps? And all these different things have contextual relevance and not. So it just allowed me to have a very discerning attitude toward all the information I had. And what I started to realize in bodybuilding very young was that there was not one single person who had all the answers. You know, I had some really great mentors when I was very young who had a lot of answers. And the single greatest, the group of greatest mentors that I had encouraged me to question everything I think I know. And that mindset has just led me down this path of like, question it all, right? If it works for this person, why? And how can I apply it to myself? So I guess come around and answer your question. I think everything has value and when applied to a contextually relevant circumstance. I've gone through phases in my life where my ego puffed up and said, that's fucking bullshit. Don't do that. And this is the right way to do it. And now I realize, well no, because if it works for that person in this context, that's correct. But I also believe there's a more accurate way and a less accurate way, or a more effective way and a less effective way to do things. But most things, or many things, not most, many things have value. So I now pass them through that lens of like, yeah, this thing could be applied and here's where the value is. And I encourage everyone listening, if you're a student of this game, pass everything through the lens of every single thing could potentially have value to someone in some context. So don't throw things out. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. Take something and say, where's the relevance to me? Where's the relevance to my audience? Where's the relevance to my client? And then just file it away. It's a tool. It's just another tool in the tool belt, man. Like training, you know, I have to make jokes about slinging weights mindlessly like a monkey. There's value in that for sure. Is it the best way to train for muscle building? No. Is there value in eating six meals a day? Obviously so. Bodybuilders have done it since the probably 80s and 90s. But does that matter to someone who's fat and overweight and just wants to build muscle? No, right? So context is everything. So it's you know, because as you know, every educator out there says, well, it depends. And the response is context. So who, what, why, when, and where, you know?
And I've eaten six meals a day or six different feedings plus for a very long time. No. But one of those things is I'm tall. I'm generally speaking, stay fairly lean, fairly naturally, and I have to eat aggressively in order to put on muscle over the years.
Exactly.
I walk around about 255 pounds. And for me, it was about food volume. And this is one of the big things, right? In order to get the sheer amount of food volume you need for someone who is taller, enough protein, you probably actually have to do it over a larger number of feedings. I think where it gets people in the context of someone who needs to lose significant weight, and you're telling them, hey, you need to eat more frequent meals, then that person probably already is struggling with things like a relationship with their hunger cues. They're probably struggling with portion control. So if you feed them more meals, they're probably likely to overeat by sheer volume of food, as opposed to keep the size of the meals within the amounts that would create the necessary calorie number to actually put them in a deficit if the goal is in fact weight loss. So
maybe.
I want to see where I can take this further because I mean this is fantastic. Are there any other specific things that you think like that really just seem to pop up kind of more generally that you think, okay, cool, it would be helpful if people had more context on these particular concepts?
Sure. Well, you know, one of the most kind of often talked about controversial conversations is cardio. Like what's the application of cardiovascular training? Do you need to do 2 hours a day to get in shape? Like how much do you need to do any? And what's the value of it? And I think people put cardio in the wrong bucket, right? Like I think cardio, in my opinion, is the least effective way to burn fat, but that doesn't mean it's not relevant. Doesn't mean it's not useful, right? So why do I do cardio? Well, cardio can maybe improve my aerobic fitness or maybe improve my anaerobic threshold. And maybe it can allow me to train with weights more effectively. And maybe it can allow me to burn more fat at rest. Right. Like, so you have to understand, maybe it's a great way to modulate stress. Maybe it's a great way to improve perfusion, blood flow. And so you go, okay, well, people assume when I say something like, well, I don't think cardio is a really particularly effective way of burning fat. Well, why do you do it? Well, because there's about 50 other reasons that it's beneficial for. I'm not saying it's not useful for burning fat, but if you're trying to burn fat and that's your biggest lever, you're in big trouble. like learn to train more effectively, learn to ultimately train at a higher intensity, and fat just falls off, right? Teach your body to be more about, or train your body to be more metabolically flexible, and fat just falls off, right? When I don't eat, I lose fat. Wow, really? Yes. If I just leave a little gap between meals. Yeah.
Let's plug metabolic flexibility, because I was just on my good friend Mike T. Nelson's podcast, and Mike's the man when it comes to, he's great. Met him in 2017. We've been at numerous events together, spoken at events together, and he was recent. I've had him on before to talk a little bit about metabolic flexibility, but honestly, this is a kind of a cool concept if you want to throw it out, because I saw him interacting with you about this concept on social media very recently.
Yeah. Just to give Mike credit, like Mike is just this amazing library and wealth of information, right? And I've taken all of his courses. I when he has a new course online, I pay all for all of his courses. And just like, he just is a great way of simplifying things. And so metabolic flexibility for the listener in this most simplified form is the body's ability to use different fuels when needed. So when I'm doing something high intensity, the body actually has the ability to tap into the glycolytic systems and produce energy at a fast rate. And if I'm doing something less intense or you know, very low intensity, the body's using mostly fat for fuel. And the ability to kind of fluctuate between those things is, you know, moving in the direction of metabolic effectiveness or metabolic flexibility or metabolic health. And one of the first objectives, I think, for anyone aspiring to improve their fitness should be this concept of metabolic flexibility. Like, how can I get my body to use all fuels when necessary? So it's not, hey, I'm going to do a ketogenic diet so I can just use all fat for fuel, because then I lose the high end, right? The top gear, right? So if you think of carbs as being like fifth and sixth gear, like if I put the gas down, the pedal down, like I want to go, right? And you'll lose that top gear, because I experimented with it for 3+ years on a ketogenic-ish diet. And I absolutely, I don't know if I lost the top gear, but I lost the ability to sustain the top gear over time. And so then fat, well, I want my body to be effective at burning. If I'm not eating carbohydrates, let's say I go 6 hours without eating a carbohydrate, my blood glucose should drop to a level that my body is going to start metabolizing more fat for fuel. And you should be able to do that. And not everyone is able to do that. And so that's kind of contextually more or less what metabolic flexibility comes down to at its simplest level.
I can't endorse Mike enough. He's great. He really knows his stuff. And
Flex diet certification.
Absolutely. Yep. And like, go get on his email list. If you guys want to learn more about like running an email list, get on Mike's email list. He puts something out every day, which might seem annoying at first, but it self-selects to the people who like his brand. And he's got a whole bunch of stuff. He's like into heavier metal than I can handle. I love heavy metal, likes kiteboarding. You know, his wife Jody's a rock star, awesome. Great human. But also related to this, we're talking a lot about conditioning, and I have to believe you'd know my friend Joel Jameson. And Joel is the absolute authority when it comes to conditioning stuff. He wrote the book on it, literally. And so he's one of my favorite. I'm actually going through his certified conditioning coach certification again, because I just needed a refresher on it. So Joel is also epic. So guys, resources, I mean, this is how I am. I want to make sure you guys know about Ben and the resources Ben has. And then obviously we have some other stuff that's related as well, but it just shows. So this is a really good place to pivot to, you know, it shows a dedication to continuously learning. I want you to talk about your philosophy towards that. And it shows an abundance mindset where it's not all about you and your brand. You're afraid to send other people to someone else who knows something about other resources. You actually endorse glowingly other people that you respect. So you want to talk about where that came from and why you believe that?
Sure, man. Well, I'll tell you what, when, you know, it's the Dunning-Kruger effect, right? It's like when you know a little bit, you think you know a lot. And when you start to learn a bit more, you don't know anything about anything. It's, you know, the more I learn, the less I know. And so when I surround myself with people who are just the best at what they do, you start to realize really quickly that you don't know a lot. And I just honestly want to be exceptional coach or exceptional educator. And so I'm just always looking for the best resources. And yeah, I don't expect to know everything. I certainly don't claim to know everything. I try to be a deep generalist. I try to have a really good idea in all areas of performance and all areas of nutrition, all areas of recovery, blood work and you know, functional medicine. And then if I need someone who's really specific, then I'll have an incredible resource of professionals to lean on. And that, I think for me, that's just the best way to do it. I would rather, I would say, like, I've made money with assholes in my life. I'd rather I would not do it again. And I'd rather just make less money with people that I love and have everyone just be successful and share. And not everyone fits into that world. And that's okay. But, you know, I just, if you're doing things well and you have integrity and you're constantly aspiring to be better, life's just better.
I'm a huge subscriber to the idea of abundance mindset. I like to share the book What's in It for Them by Joe Polish,
yep,
which is a really good mantra. Like, I read this book recently and I'm like, this is literally my philosophy. And I've gone about my career trying to share, showcase, support other people, showing up, attending their events, supporting people. And I've said this numerous times, like, the industry has given me back tenfold what I've been able to give to it simply because people recognize that and they want you to be involved in what they're doing. So it's very easy to support good people. And if you're around enough of the stuff, like you said, like you alluded to, you develop a pretty good filter for knowing who are good people to work with versus not dealing with assholes. I mean, is there anything that goes into your filter, any red flags that you look for the people you ultimately try not to deal with, or any green flags for people that you like working with?
Yeah, man, there's definitely some people who get red flags. And I realize it's not, I don't judge the person, right? So I'm not trying to condemn someone. Sometimes, confusing the message and the messenger. And so I'll tell you the first thing that's a red flag for me is there's people out there who call themselves educators, who their way of educating is to tell people how stupid they are and how wrong they are. Mm-hmm. And just shouting at them rather than saying, hey, man, here's how I think you may want to look at that. Right. And so to me, it just comes down to a dick measuring contest. They're just trying to say, I'm better than you. I'm smarter than you. And you're an idiot. And you're just like, whoa, hold on. That doesn't work. That doesn't work for me. And there's very specific people out there who do this. And they're just, it just becomes a pissing match. And I'm like, why don't you just, if you claim to be the educator that you are, why don't you just educate? Why don't you just like help people? And the point of an educator is like, hey man, why don't you try it this way? Right. And I've really met some just incredible educators. I don't know if you've had Jacques Taylor. Do you know who Jacques Taylor is?
I do not know. And I'm not familiar with that name, which is crazy because I pride myself on knowing the industry, but it's hard to know everybody.
No, he's one of these guys, man, who you wouldn't know unless you're kind of in a very specific circle. But I took one of his classes one time. He teaches a neurophysiology class. And I was not only enamored with the content, but I was enamored with the way that this guy presented. And I was like, I want to watch this guy teach every class he ever puts on, because I've never taken a class in my entire life, and I've taken hundreds of classes, where someone was able to convey the message in a way that you simply understood, like a very complex message, in a way that you understood. And he encouraged you to think, and he made you think. And I'd suggest you have him on. He's got a, forget the name of the course. He's got a bunch of them right now, but I'll connect you with him.
Please.
But he's a nervous system guy, and he's out of Maine. I don't think he even has the internet, man. Like, he's one of these guys, he's kind of living off grid. He's got a family now. He's like, I'm kind of done with it all, man. And just one of the most brilliant, humble human beings I've ever met. I took one of his classes and I was like, why doesn't everyone teach like this? He's just truly caring, passionate educator. And so those two to me are the polar extremes of it, right? One guy who just like, he's the most brilliant neurophysiologist I've ever met in my life. And he's teaching in a way that makes you leave the weekend feeling like, oh, I know what I'm talking about. Like, I understand this a little bit now, rather than making you feel just like defeated and beaten down because you don't know what he knows.
This, I'm going to guess that you 100% know our Canadian friend. I grew up in Newfoundland, so I didn't know him growing up, but Muscle Doc Jordan Shallow. Jordan teaches that way as well. And I figured you would have known Jordan. Again, this world is kind of small. He's one of the speakers at my event in October. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've always given Jordan praise on is he remembers names. And if someone asks a question that maybe someone, I've been at events where someone has made me feel stupid for asking a question that I don't necessarily think was a stupid question.
Totally.
It felt, the response felt condescending. And I was sort of disappointed by it. But Jordan has a way of never making someone feel stupid. And he also tends to remember specific details about people. And I've noticed that when you go to a pre-script event, and I'm actually going to do pre-script one in the fall. It's one of my plans because I'm trying to like soak up. I'm an education sponge. But their community is very tight. And when they come to Edmonton a lot when they do an intensive in person, there's a crew that comes every time. And you can tell this is a tight group, not just a bunch of people who are showing up to worship someone who puts themselves up on a pedestal. Jordan is very down to earth. And mean, there's so many reasons to go to things like this. One of the reasons is to learn from the educational styles. If you aspire to grow into the space where you want to educate and present, then you can take a lot from people who are really goddamn good at it. So you have
Jordan it. Jordan and I traveled together teaching. We did the UK, we did Canada, the UK, Australia. I think that's it. Maybe one more.
But we traveled. That's it. That's it. Yeah. That's a lot of travel.
This is pre-prescript, right? Right. I think he was actually writing the manual for prescript while we were on tour. And I was very much encouraged. Like when we first met, he didn't have any online presence at all. And I was very encouraging. Like, hey, man, you're just a brilliant dude. And he was very, you know, he's coming out of a challenging relationship. And he just took it and ran, man. He's just such a brilliant dude. Really good guy, good friend. Just a good human.
The intelligence is fucking profound. And he approaches, I think he's a lot like you in the way you described, because he's approached his initial education with a profound curiosity. He really wanted to go deep dive into, starting with largely human anatomy was, I think, his initial interest. And then obviously how that relates into biomechanics. And we're seeing a lot of like internet, social media buzz about biomechanics stuff. And I really do endorse Jordan and his team's work, as I think that it's really the best resource out there for the applied biomechanics stuff. It's so much more than that, because I think a lot of stuff gets thrown around. And I think a lot of people are kind of developing brands and building status around peddling or pawning off some of the newfangled biomechanics stuff as A, fact-based and fundamental, and B, as their own stuff, when in fact, you know, I know where it all came from, right? And that's a complicated thing. But if you see within that space, you see, I think, some of the more the red flag behavior that I personally try to keep a little bit hands off, but I'm good there. So anything else along the path when it comes to, you know, education, building your business, any other fundamental, we've talked a lot about these, but any other fundamental behaviors or attitudes that instrumental to your success, things you learned along the way that you adopted, or maybe even some identities and some narratives that you discarded, that you needed to discard to become, to get where you are?
Yeah, I think if it's coaches listening, if you view every person that sits in front of you as an opportunity, right? Everyone that sits in front of me as a client or as a student, I see an opportunity for them to, for me to learn, right? For me to learn about, how do I convey this message to them? And what is the challenge they're experiencing right now? What's the one thing that I could teach to them that could have the biggest impact? They call these high impact habits or big levers, you know, like what could you give to this person that if you just showed them this, or maybe you just taught them to think about it this way, would completely change their trajectory. You know, I had a guy do that for me, and it wasn't even that long ago, probably 2016 or 17. Actually, it was earlier than that, probably 2013. He was the guy, you know, if you know Tom Purvis, I'm sure you've heard of Tom.
Yep, heard of
him. Yeah, just like challenge what you think you know, right? He said, come in with an open mind and challenge what you think you know. And you have all these beliefs and these biases and these ways that things just have to be. And leaving his weekend for the first time, which I think was 2013, just like made my head spin. And I was like, I've been doing everything wrong my entire life. And yeah, it's, you know, not often those things happen. I you know, at that point had studied quite a bit, and it just was paradigm shifting. And so you realize that not everyone's ready to learn. We'll start with that. But people who are ready to learn, if you just give them the right information, the right delivery at the right time, you can completely change somebody's life. And so anyone who comes to my camps, that's the objective, right? It's like, I know it's used a lot, it's hyperbole, but you're looking at this blank canvas, and or maybe it's not a blank canvas, maybe there's something on it, but you're looking at, like, if they just remove this one thing, or they did these two or three things, boom, it would all click. And so you're looking for the next big lever. So I think that for me, contextually, is how I really look at everyone. And so if every coach out there just looked at everyone as an opportunity, both to improve yourself and to support them to be their best, the whole world becomes a better place really quick.
Love it. Trying to get my thought orientation back on track. My mind went blank. I'm just soaking this stuff up. I love it. God, where do I go from here?
No stress, man. It happens to me too.
I'm just really just absorbing this stuff. And sometimes I just don't have something. What about boundaries? This is something I love asking people too. It's, I think that in the grand scheme of my experience within the industry, I noticed early, and I don't think I really like contextualized it. The first thing I noticed was the people who are probably the most successful, and success is a nebulous term. It can definitely mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But because mostly I was interacting on Facebook for years before I leaned into Instagram, and Instagram is a different animal. And I noticed that the people that I identified as being fairly successful, having built big brands, were not engaged in petty arguments, disputes, and overly active in these little clusters of stuff on Facebook. But I noticed that the people who tended to get in heavily engaged in these clusters, the sort of the same type of success tend to elude them. So I think there's a sort of a thing there. But it really comes down to boundaries. I look at people like Dr. John Berardi, Brett Bartholomew, Jonathan Goodman is a good friend who does this stuff really well. Even Joel Jameson is really good at it. There's so many more. And they're very good at having, Molly Galbraith, having boundaries in place where they may be interactive with media to a certain extent, but they don't live in there. And they've been able to carve out space to actually work on the highest leverage tasks. So do you have any sort of key philosophies around how you approach setting boundaries, how you say yes or no to opportunities as they're presented to you? You said yes to coming on my podcast. I really do want anyone coming on here, this to be so valuable that it was worth it.
Yeah. So first, when it comes to like engaging in the, the troll conversations online, for lack of a better term, and I made my living in my underwear for 10 years, I've been trolled to the deepest lengths, and it just doesn't affect me anymore. I'm just like, I don't ever take it on personally. I just see it as a reflection of the person who's on the other end of it. And I was like, hey man, I wish you the best. If I can ever support you in your journey, let me know. As far as personally, I committed to early on, probably 2017 or 18. I just wanted to spend more time creating. So, right, the way to conceptualize social media, you're either creating or you're consuming. And I like the idea of, like, I just wanted to create. I wanted to express what I learned and what I think and how I approach things. And so if you looked at my Google Drive, I say this often, but it would like make your head hurt to know how much information I've written and courses I've written. And I've got 50 books that I've written on, like, the equivalent of what would be 50 books. And just cause like I'm an expressor, like, and I haven't historically been a good writer, and I'm certainly not very orally communicative or not an effective communicator orally. So I'm like, well, I need to express all this stuff that's in my head. So I started writing, and I realized in the first thing I wrote was 2000. First thing I started to write effectively was probably 2010. And I was a terrible writer, but I wrote hours a day. And I was like, I'm just going to write. And so now, instead of me having to engage on social media, my team just goes in, pulls some of this content that I wrote, and then they post it. And I'm so worried about what's going to be put out there, because sometimes you just write stream of consciousness and you're like, that was an incomplete thought. That's going to get torn down. And I'm like, oh man. So sometimes we get some stuff out there. I'm like, yeah, I wish that wouldn't have seen the light of day, but it's like, yeah, whatever, man. If anyone's going to judge me for something I wrote 5 years ago as an incomplete thought that my team just happened to extrapolate, my fault for not having a better filtration system. But I would rather be a creator than empower my team to go and engage the world.
Writing, love it. If you can see over my shoulder, I literally have half a bookshelf on books on writing. It's something I study. I think it's one of the most fundamental things you can do. You did it right, is just dive into it and do a ton of it. You invariably get better at it. And then you described someone who is dispensed with the fears that I think most coaches have about putting themselves out there, the fear of criticism, the fear of ridicule. And maybe it was because you ended up in a situation where you dealt with such a volume of it, you were able to put it in context. And how likely are you going to get something about some less than perfectly formed thought compared to someone making light of a bodybuilder in a stage bikini in a sense, right?
Well, man, there's some trolls out there, and there's some high profile trolls out there who are trying to tear people down. And you're like, yeah, man, I'm like, and sometimes you just grin and you take it. And I think for anyone out there who's afraid of getting trolled, and just be real. And like, as long as you're being real, like, hey, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I didn't know. Like, thanks for correcting me. You know, thanks for making it better. You know, it tends to not be such, it tends to diffuse it relatively quickly.
And I mean, every once a blue moon, and I did it today. I will, maybe a mistake is too strong a word, but every once a blue moon, I will make the mistake of responding to something or engaging in something in a fashion that, you know, oh, and then of course it invites, you know, back and forth retaliation. So I try to be, it's a good reminder about like, okay, this is why I don't do this shit. I saw something that I thought was a very bad take on Twitter. Right. It was a strength coach belittling and making fun of a celebrity. I won't give away the context. And I saw this and I ignored it. But then someone else pointed out and it basically like reshared it and like criticized it. And I wrote to that person, I said, yeah, I thought it was a bad take too. The original creator came in and started sniping at me, didn't handle it very well. So it turned into a little bit of back and forth. And I realized I'm like, it's always distracting. It sits in the back of your mind. It takes you off mission and off purpose. And every once in a blue moon, every 6 months, I need that little reminder that gets me back into, okay, focus on creation. I chuckle when you said that because I wrote an article back in 2019. It's literally for fitness professionals on creation versus consumption. It goes into depth about this entire philosophy. If anybody wants it, just message me. I've got to republish it and I'll send it to you. The original publication, the website's no longer there. But ultimately, I believe in this stuff, and I see a lot of people who get caught in this loop of it's an emotionally soothing way to procrastinate, to actually just endlessly consume. Now, that's not to say we've been talking about education, right? And a lot of it, I love it, but you can't let constantly educating yourself crowd out or take up the space of the things that you want to do, whatever act of creation, whether it's written, video, podcast, etc. The business that you want to build. And I think that's a big bottleneck for people. And it's a very insidious one because I think it's so soothing. You don't feel guilty about doing the next course. You don't feel guilty about reading the book. You don't feel guilty about diving into the YouTube resources. So you have to be selective about it. Ben, you've been an amazing guest. I'm really grateful to finally get to chat with you. It is really funny considering the fact that I've been seeing you in bodybuilding magazines for, God, it certainly has been well over a decade, I suppose, right? And I want to obviously let people know where they can find you, your resources, follow you on social media, check out what you have on your website.
Yeah. Easy Muscle Intelligence Podcast, a good place to go. We have incredible guests, incredible conversations around muscle building, fat loss, longevity, hormones, spirituality, finding your purpose. And you know, what started off as primarily muscle focused evolved to performance and then evolved to purpose. And then, you know, now we really try to support men to show up at their highest and best for what matters most to them. And that could be anything. That could be family, that could be business, that could be really whatever. And so I enjoy it. I enjoy what I do. And sounds like we have some great parallels, man. Love to have a further conversation.
Well, doors open. Your Instagram, where can people follow you?
I don't even know what my Instagram is. I think it's BPAK Fitness, BPAK.
Fitness. I don't think they're going to have much trouble. They search for your name, you'll pop up. I follow you. They can search who I follow and they'll find you. And of course, anybody listening, my longtime listeners, guys, go and check out what Ben is doing. I bring people on because I want to share them with you guys so that you know who they are, what they're doing, because they might be an incredibly valuable resource to you or someone else you know. And again, if you're someone who's finding me for the first time through Ben's media, well, I threw around a few names of people that Ben respects, educators like Mike T. Nelson, Joel Jamison, Muscle Doc Jordan Shallow. They've all been guests on my podcast. You scroll through. I've had pretty good legacy of the who's who of the industry that I'm very proud of, and maybe you'll check some of those out. And then thanks, guys. Thank you, Ben. Stay tuned next week for another great episode.